it visually interesting indeed. Hey there, internet. My name is Jack Packard.
I'm Darren Mooney.
And I'm Lee Murky.
Yes, Lee, thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and where they can find you?
Hey, so I'm Lee Murky. I'm a small content creator. I make video essays about films that I find interesting. My YouTube is Fake Critic, The Fake Critic. And my Twitter is CleverLee_dope. And it's obnoxious on purpose, I promise.
Yep, and your Twitter handle's right beneath your name for anyone who wants to follow. I haven't seen anything obnoxious yet, so, you know, don't hold me responsible, but I'm looking forward to that.
And I will actually single out Lee's essay on The Lighthouse, Lee's video essay on The Lighthouse, which is fantastic, one of the best video essays I've seen in a long time.
Absolutely. I clicked on that link, and as soon as you said you loved The Witch, I said, all right, we're going to be friends forever now. As the Vovich is also one of my favorite horror movies. I talk about it probably too much. But hey, that's okay. Because, you know, as speaking of horror movies, that's a bad segue. The Snyder Cut. Sweet Jeebus. This movie is 4 hours long. There's so much to say about it. Here's how I would like to start at least my opinions on it. Oh, and by the way, for anyone watching this live, we are probably going to delve into spoilers.
The movie was first released like 4 years ago, so I feel like you probably have a rough idea of what's involved.
Exactly. Spoiler
I know
alert.
It was a different movie, to be clear, but same basic movie.
Well,
same basic structure, plot,
I guess, like,
characters.
Spoiler alert, the heroes win. Like, whoa.
Whoa, Jack.
Whoa. Here's how I'm going to start my take on this movie, which I previewed a little bit in my tweet about this episode, which is this is a significantly better version of Justice League than the theatrical cut. This is a more coherent, a better fleshed out movie. It's also still very bad. And it's 4 hours long, which is too long to be a movie. I'm putting that out there. 4 hours, too long.
Well, it is. It would, I think, technically be the second, had it been released in cinemas, it would be the second longest theatrical release in American movie history after, and I may be wrong here, but I think Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet takes the cake. And I say that as somebody who has very fond memories of Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet. I think it's fantastic and well worth seeking out. And I say that as somebody who found it on television at midnight on a Thursday night while still in secondary school. I was like, sure, this can't be too long, and went to sleep 5 a.m. the following morning with TV ads, with ads included. Whether or not it's too long, it is possibly the second longest.
And that's fair. No, for me, 4 hours is too long to be a movie. But Lee, I think, you know, I was checking out your Twitter, and you said something that was, I think, striking to the heart of the Snyder Cut during your short Twitter video. Do you want to explain that? It was a famous saying about bad poetry that I think sums it up perfectly.
Harold Bloom said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the great tragedy of bad poetry is that it is all sincere. And that more or less it encapsulates the way I reacted to this film, because like you said, it is bad, but here, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's not doing the, let me backtrack a little bit to the Marvel stuff. They, for the last decade, have been doing this thing where they're taking a subculture, a subgenre from the periphery of pop culture and making it cool. They're making it acceptable for the cool kids, where, you know, I know you guys are too cool for superheroes, so what we're gonna do is make fun of ourselves every chance we get. There is a joke after every serious moment in Marvel films until there's not. Hmm. To the point where, like, when I'm watching something like Civil War, I'm expecting, as, you know, Tony Stark and the Winter Soldier are, Captain America and the Winter Soldier are beating Tony Stark to death, I'm expecting a joke somewhere in there.
Sure.
And it feels weird when they want me to take it seriously. And that's been an issue with me with that specific genre. So for Zack Snyder to step in with this film and take it so seriously, something about it was refreshing. Like, oh, this is a dumb comic book film, and it's completely earnest and sincere, and it's refreshing, even if it is a nightmare.
Yes.
It is so.
And I can definitely be with you there, because like, and of course, you know, having already seen the theatrical cut of this, like having Snyder have the opportunity to actually delve into Cyborg's backstory, into the Flash's backstory, give us some actual meat to all of these characters. Well, I guess we don't get too much of the Flashes. We got more of the Flashes, but we get more meat. Everything is more meat.
Everything is more. Forget about meat. It's just more.
It's just more. Well, it's meat, but it's like Taco Bell meat, where they can't legally call it beef.
True. You can go ahead.
Oh, and so it's like I enjoy all of the more that we got. I enjoy little bits of the more that we got, but I still don't think it makes for a good movie as a whole, is I guess the right. End of my thought.
And I think it's impossible to watch this film in a vacuum, because I think that would be a miserable experience if you just take the context from it, yeah. Right? Like, without that theatrical cut, I'm not sure I have a positive response to it. Also, without the added context of, again, I'm going to bring in Marvel, the way they reverse arcs, where like Tony Stark will learn something in a film, but then in the next film, it's like he's learned nothing. He's a clean slate again. DC doesn't do that. Zack Snyder carries on, for better or for worse, every arc. And that makes part of it like baffling to me. Why does the world love Superman now? Because I'm old enough to remember in BVS when everyone hated him. Like, where was the change? Did they only appreciate him when he died? Because that's weird. Like, so it's impossible to watch it in a vacuum, and I'm not sure I would want to. And all that added context makes it an interesting cultural artifact for sure.
I mean, I think that kind of like added context is, as Lee points out, completely inseparable from the movie. And it's not just the fact that we, you know, that this was originally a movie that Snyder was supposed to direct, and then it was, you know, taken away, or he left after feeling he couldn't fight with the studio anymore, following the tragic passing of his daughter, and it was given to Whedon, and Whedon's first impulse was to do exactly what Lee said, to make it more of a Marvel movie. I rewatched both of them recently, and like you can tell, they literally replay Batman's arc. He's an asshole again, except this time, he's not an asshole who punches people, because fans really don't like that. He's an asshole who's snarky and witty and says funny things because, hey, we're not taking this seriously. You know, we want you to know we're in on the joke. I think Lee made that remark about like Marvel's sense of humor. Marvel's sense of humor is the defensive kind of like 12-year-old kid who kind of likes something but doesn't want to open himself up to being mocked for liking it. So he says, I made the joke, so you don't have to. like, I got in there first, so you guys can't make fun of it because I already did, but I really kind of love this thing, but I'm not going to tell you I love it, because if I tell you I do, you guys are just going to laugh at me on the internet and call me earnest and like joke about how the fact that these two characters share the same mother means this is a terrible movie or something like that. I don't know. We don't really want to get into that. But like, even outside of that, the fact that it has been like 4 years, and in those 4 years, you have seen Marvel jump. Now, to be clear, Age of Ultron was released in 2015, so you could argue that like the really modern stage of Marvel completely dominating pop culture only really kicked into gear when the Russos arrived, with like Winter Soldier in 2014, but like Avengers 2.5 Civil War in 2016, released opposite Batman v Superman. And at the time, the narrative was, and you know, I mean, I think a lot of people would still agree, like Batman v Superman was a big, lumbering, self-serious, self-important, indulgent, overlong, messy film, which I actually really like, so I'm not being mean, but that was generally the consensus. And Civil War was the light, funny, bantery, springy, light on its feet, this is supposed to be fun, everything is shot and color corrected, and you know, everything looks flat in terms of cinematography, you're never confused by what's going on, the character motivations are pretty basic, and as Lee pointed out, nobody takes it too seriously. There's a moment where like in this big fight over like Scarlet Witch killing 11 civilians in a unilateral foreign intervention overseas, like Black Widow and Hawkeye are like, are we still friends? Well, it depends on how hard you hit me. And that sort of thing. And in 2016, the mood was Civil War, That's the ideal. That's what we want. That's what comic book movies should be. Batman v Superman, shoehorn yourself out there, show yourself the door. And like, you look at how the press around like Batman, around Justice League, where 2 months after its release in May and in June, you saw a bunch of bloggers, and these bloggers who had been very critical about it, very cynical about it, going, oh, Martha, oh, Peach Tea, ah, you know, Lex Luthor, Mark Zuckerberg, I don't know, all that sort of stuff. They're taken to the set, and they're literally told by Warner Brothers, we are trying to go, and this is a quote from them, we are trying to go full Marvel on this. We have brought in Joss Whedon, who did the Avengers movie, the movie that broke a billion and helped turn breaking a billion into the thing that superhero movies are now expected to do de rigueur. Mm-hmm. So we brought him in, he's rewriting the script. Snyder, who is still directing, he's going to make it light, it's going to be funny, people are going to laugh, they're going to enjoy being superheroes. It's going to be just like the Marvel movies. And then we have 4 years in which Marvel completely dominate the cultural space. We have Infinity War. We have Endgame. We have, like, the two Ant-Man movies. We have Captain Marvel. We have, like, you know, Black Panther, which is fantastic. Thor Ragnarok, which is fantastic. But they're just everywhere, and they're saturating, and they're coming into television now. And everything starts to look like Marvel movies. So you get, like, a reboot of the Hellboy franchise, which was, like, directed by Guillermo del Toro, one of the most, like, distinct superhero franchises out there. And now it's a David Harbour movie, but it's very like that Marvel movie stuff that you like. And you have like the X-Men, which, you know, and I know Bryan Singer comes with baggage, and I know it's very difficult to talk about the X-Men movies now, but the X-Men are now kind of reinvented by Fox in the style of Marvel cinematic movies. Like, if you look at Dark Phoenix is basically what if Fox tried to remake Civil War, except instead of fighting at an airport, they were fighting while trying to cross the street. There's like extended scenes. There's extended scenes where like Charles Xavier talks about how we're superheroes now. We're not mutants. We're superheroes. And like at the end of like Dark Phoenix, in case you don't get the subtext, they are taken into custody of the Mutant Control Unit, the MCU. And in a broader sense of like context, you know, Fox are bought by Disney. The character of Spider-Man is brought back in under Disney's control in agreement with Sony, the shared custody and all that stuff happening as well. And then you have things like the Martin Scorsese thing happening where he's like, I know, sorry about this. I apologize for bringing this up. The comments are going to be wild on this, I promise. But Scorsese brings it up and he says, Marvel movies aren't cinema. And everybody jumps at him and they're like, what are you talking about? You're disrespecting these movies. And nobody bothers to read the comments or engage with what he's actually saying. Because, I mean, Scorsese's gone on record and said, actually, I really love, say, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movies. Those movies are fantastic. I'm actually talking about the business of making movies and the way in which movies are made. And they all look exactly the same. Now, he did an essay on Fellini, El Maestro, for Harper's, which made the point much more succinctly, much more cleverly, and much less offensively, I think. Much less, like, much less get people's back up, I think, than the New York Times article. And it's a very convincing argument, which is the content of art, the idea that everything is now packaged and you're designed to be given stuff similar to stuff that you already liked because it's all been focus grouped and market tested. So here's the thing. When Snyder's Justice League is released, it is 4 years later. Everybody is a little bit tired of that. And on top of that, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Like, outside of Christopher Nolan's Tenet, nobody's had a big dumb blockbuster for over a year at this point. So Snyder's Justice League arrives and it's a breath of fresh air. I think I liked it a lot more than Jack. I think I maybe liked it a tiny bit more than Lee. I did not love it. I absolutely, like, I did not, it's not one of the greatest movies ever, despite the fact I do another podcast where we talk about the IMDb's greatest movies ever, and it's on there now. You know, I'm going to be a dissenting opinion and say, maybe it's not. But that said, like, you look at it and you look at the reception to it. You look at things like, say, Matt Zoller-Seitz's review at Roger Ebert, where he talks about it being like what Scorsese was talking about when he talked about cinema. You look at, say, Robbie Collins' review in The Telegraph, where he says, this is the last word on America's obsession with superheroes. There will be superhero movies after this, but there will probably never be something as unique, distinct, and like in your face as this is. This is a pinnacle, a peak superhero movie. Jack is rolling his eyes so hard you can hear it on the audio version of this podcast. Owen Gleiberman calls it a transcendental moment in like pop cinema. I don't agree with these things, but I find it fascinating. I don't agree with these things, but I find it fascinating that we've reached a point where people are saying that about a Zack Snyder movie with a straight face. Like 4 years ago, you would have been laughed out of court for saying that by the consensus, by the internet. You would have been dragged behind horses and said, look at this dude saying this thing about this guy. And I find it interesting how the mood has changed. So I think Lee is right when he says that, like, the reception to the Snyder Cut and the reaction to the Snyder Cut is not so much about the Snyder Cut itself, which we'll probably talk about in a moment, but about the culture around it, because none of this exists in a vacuum. And I don't think you would want to watch it in a vacuum. I don't think you can watch it in a vacuum. And I find that aspect of the Snyder Cut fascinating. Sorry, Jack, you look like you've been biting your lip and are ready to tear in. Go.
There was so much, Darren. You always give me so much where it's like, I want to tell, oh, wait, no, now that point, now that point.
I know. And the Gish Gallop argument. It's like, boom, 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 boom. Say so many crazy things so quickly, Jack can't respond.
That I can't respond. You're correct. You are correct in that, both of you are correct, in that Marvel has a look and a feel. The MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is a cohesive universe. It's a cohesive piece of cinema. And we've talked about the Marvel machine so many times. They are efficient. They are businesslike about their comic book movies. And I don't necessarily blame them for that, because they are cohesive. First point I want to nibble at here is the idea of Marvel blandening the superhero genre, because I don't a lot of people blame Disney and Marvel for this. I more blame these other studios and other filmmakers for trying to siphon Marvel's thingy.
I blame Warner Brothers. Like, the problem with, like, the problem with Joss Whedon's Justice League isn't that Disney made $1 billion with Avengers. Mm-hmm. It's that the industry exists in such a way that Warner Brothers looked at Disney making $1 billion with Avengers and said, let's get him in without any regard to the movie they were actually making. And like whatever you say about Snyder, whatever you think about Snyder, you hired him to make this movie. He had started making this movie. If you wanted to change gears, the thing to do was to hire him to make BVS, not have him start making the next one until you were happy with it, and then maybe either get rid of him or bring in somebody else. Changing midstream, that's the problem there. That, for at least for me, that was the big kind of, like, it was like, oh no, we're midstream, let's toss this guy off and bring this guy in without any regard for what the movie is supposed to be or look like. We'll just assume that it will look like, again, it's like, you know, you go to McDonald's and you order a Big Mac, you know what's in it. I don't want an off-brand Big Mac. The whole point of a Big Mac is that, like, and I, you know, I don't always want a Big Mac either, but if I want a Big Mac, I want a Big Mac.
What's the Big Mac called in Coming to America?
Oh.
What's the, because we just,
the Big Mick, isn't it? It's the Big Mick. I don't want a Big Mick. Yeah, I don't want a Big Mick. Like, if I get a craving for a Big Mac, I'm going to order a Big Mac from McDonald's. Right. I'm not going to go to Burger King and demand that they make a Whopper like a Big Mac. This is a really depressing analogy, but this is where cinema is in 2021. I'm sorry.
I don't understand from a studio perspective. I guess I get it on some level, but this impulse to make the same thing that's working with Disney, because in that window where we had at least Age of Ultron, we had Deadpool come out and be incredibly successful. Mm-hmm. We had Logan come out and be incredibly successful and critically acclaimed. And you had all of these offshoots like Kingsman and all of these films that came out. So it's like, even films that are non-IP, non-comic book films, like The Revenant came out and made a ton of money. It's like, there can be diversity. Just get filmmakers to make these films. Yeah. Why are you trying to make The Avengers 2.0? Like, that doesn't make sense.
And I think, my crazy theory for that is that, like, we focus on Age of Ultron and we focus on Endgame, we focus on Infinity War, we focus on Civil War. What Warner Brothers are actually looking at is something like Ant-Man making, like, $600 or $700 million, a character nobody has ever heard of, with, like, again, with Peyton Reed attached. And, you know, I mean, I like Down with Love, but I'm also, like, I also like Edgar Wright a bit. But it's like, they look at how much money that made just by being tethered, by being hooked into this big machine. And they're like, imagine, and again, the irony is that, like, for, like, as much as I hate Joss Whedon's Justice League, as much as it is the rare blockbuster that Darren actually has fire in his soul towards, that, like, I would happily see burn. And I'm sorry, I'm normally the mellow dude on this podcast.
You really,
really just deep inside. anger. I get very angry. But, as much as I hate it, one of the things I will say to it is that its failure meant that DC start or that Warner Brothers started taking chances again because they really had nothing left to lose. So like you started getting superhero movies like Shazam, like Aquaman, like Joker, like Birds of Prey. Now, you may not like 1, 2, 3 or all four of those, but there's no denying that they are wildly different from one another. Mm-hmm. Like I wish I loved Aquaman, and I know people who deeply do because it's such
it's
a gaunt. Yeah,
I love
yeah, it is Jack. That, yeah. that was Jack. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that kind of, like that's the kind of thing that I like seeing and I want to see more of, which is mm-hmm. it's good, you know.
Well, I think we've spent a lot of time so far talking about the world that revolves around the movie. Which, like, to me is a very telling thing because again, I'm going to say, technically speaking, this is a bad movie. We can just look at the fact that it's 4 hours long. It's too long. That's too long. The medium of movies dictates no more than three. Like, three is pushing it.
Gone with the Wind. I mean, yeah. I know Gone with the Wind has actual problems with it. I don't think the length of Gone with the Wind is top of anybody's problems with it at the moment.
I'll put
The Irishman. Take that, The Irishman.
Top 10.
I love long movies. Like Edward Yang's A Brighter Summer Day mm-hmm. is, and that's 4 hours long, and that's incredible. Showa is 9 hours
yeah.
long, and that's a perfect film.
And Elephant Sitting Still as well.
Yes, I just watched The Elephant Sitting yeah. Still. It's yeah. incredible.
Like, sorry, this is the only time that anybody's going to mention Justice League and Elephant Sitting Still together, so I'm going to enjoy this.
maybe that's just me and my particular attention problems. Or more importantly, the fact that maybe it's not that it's 4 hours long, it's that it's 4 hours long, Justice League, the Snyder Cut, and it doesn't hold my attention for those 4 hours, which is, of course, the big problem. Because from a structural standpoint, I believe that the Snyder Cut of Justice League is mostly incoherent. Meandering might be a nice word. It goes on long walks and then comes right back to the same spot. There are so many points where you could very easily snip out 20 minutes, snip out 10 minutes. You can make this a 3-hour movie, I think, very, yeah. very, very easily.
Lop off the final 23 minutes and it's a 3.5-hour movie. Like that's the most obvious one. Just like stop the end. Oh, sorry.
If you take that epilogue, and I haven't done this yet, but I did something where like I took, and this is really nerdy, I was gonna make a video about it, but I took some of Paul Thomas Anderson's films and I just counted the cuts. And really interesting how his films are like vastly different, where someone like Tarantino sort of has the same structure for everything. I haven't done this yet, but if you take Justice League and you take all of the miscellaneous, meaningless moments where Lois Lane is walking in slow motion, or Wonder Woman is getting up in slow motion or preparing for battle in slow motion. If you take that stuff, you have about 30 minutes that you can salvage. So if you take out the epilogue and you take out the nonsense, you have about a 3-hour, 10-minute
film. Yeah. You can cut out all the slow motion BS. You can cut out all the dream sequences that, you know, most of the epilogue. You can cut out all that and have a very solid movie. And so, like, I think as the Snyder Cut stands right now, it is indulgent to a fault. I don't, but so the movie is at fault for being indulgent. I don't blame Zack Snyder for being indulgent though, because that's what everybody wanted. He's just giving people what they want.
I mean, like, again, there are things that I have very serious problems with. And, you know, again, this is all nerdy actual content stuff. So things like the Martian Manhunter stuff, which actively undermines anything resembling an emotional point of one of the big emotional scenes in the movie in favor of fan service. But I will go to bat for, like, for me, a large part of what I liked about this movie was the fact that it did have those long, meandering, indulging segments where like things mm-hmm. like the sequence where Aquaman, and again, this is the thing where, like Lee mentioned, the bad poetry, the sincerity of it. Like, you could if this was a Marvel movie, you would undercut all of these with like wry one-liners. You would do what Whedon did, which mm-hmm. is to chop all this stuff out because you know somebody on the internet is going to like laugh at how silly silly this is. Because it is silly. It's comic books. They wear their underpants on the outside. Like, it's not like, you know, again, it's okay for it to be earnest and silly. Mm-hmm. But things like the sequence, like just even the opening part, the don't count on it Batman sequence with Aquaman, where Aquaman peels off his clothes, leaves them on an Icelandic beach, inviting you to wonder, like, how many Icelandic beaches are just decorated with, like, Aquaman's discarded cardigans. And as he's leaving, this, like, Icelandic choir show up and start serenading him in slow motion as one of their members picks up his cardigan lovingly mm-hmm. and just sniffs and inhales the scent of Momoa. And it's like, yes, this is patently absurd and ridiculous, but it's also kind of incredibly earnest and awe-inspiring, and really sells the idea of this is a world where a man who can talk to fishes and propel himself through water with his mother's trident exists and is taken somewhat seriously by the people who inhabit it. And like that level of meandering, I actually quite like. Things like the weird sequence where Alfred teaches Wonder Woman how to make tea, and it's like that would be the first thing that you would cut from the movie. Mm-hmm. But I also like, it's probably one of my favorite Gal Gadot moments, like in her entire career, because it's so small and it's so personal, and it's like actually using Jeremy Irons in a way that Jeremy Irons is very good at being used. Mm-hmm. It's though, like, as I understand, I objectively get that it is like 4 hours long, it does not need to be longer than three, arguably 2.5, but I like those indulgences. I think that like there's something to be said for those indulgences.
I don't know if this makes sense because I've only seen it once. But, you know, I'm going to be going back and forth a lot on this, but I see the problems the film has objectively, insofar as I can say objectively.
Objectively.
I have a problem with those problems. Like, it's a heavily flawed film, but that's okay. Yeah. Like, I felt good watching it. Like, yeah. It's bad. It's junk food. But, like, you know, I don't feel so bloated.
It's a triple whopper. It's a
right. Yeah, like it's okay.
It's a bit of a mush because, like, to me, the thing that Marvel gets so correct is their characters. Is it gets me to root for their characters. Obviously, you know, like when it's Captain America, you know what Captain America's deal is. You want Captain America to win. And so there is a part of me that loves, like you said, that Gal Gadot and Jeremy Irons moment where they're just, it's just two people, they're making tea. What, two lovely characters doing lovely things. Like that sequence near the end when Superman drops in on Alfred fixing a car so Superman can figure out where the war is. By the way, cut that out. Superman can just fly to where the battle is. He's Superman.
But then he wouldn't get the shot of like Alfred like putting the little piece of like wood so he can rest his drink as he fixed the Bentley.
Right. But like that's a character moment, right? Where yeah. like Alfred gets to meet Superman and like there's a genuine reaction there. And I dig on that. Like, I really like that they attempted to give us character meat. Again, I'm going back to meat. I'm sorry. It's lunchtime. But you also have parts where Wonder Woman is trying to convince Cyborg to save the world. And Cyborg says, fuck the world. And so, like, you know, you can't, like, to me, this is the biggest sin that Zack Snyder has ever committed in all of his superhero movies, which is he gives me superheroes that I'm not necessarily rooting for within his movies. Batman is a big curmudgeonly grump and not in a loving way. You know, Aquaman actively does not want to be there. Cyborg is a big broody monster. Wonder Woman keeps talking about some dead asshole. Like, you know, that's my big problem. And I feel like Snyder actively uses our meta knowledge of these superheroes to sidestep giving us good characters within his own movies.
Yeah. And I think it was Scorsese who said filmmaking is an invite into your obsessions and fixations. I think with Zack Snyder, he is so obsessed with the new God angle that he doesn't really care about humanity. None of these characters feel like people, mm-hmm. not even Bruce, who's supposed to be a person. They're just vehicles for Zack Snyder's own voice and his own interest in what he wants these characters to do. So they feel like a means to an end, and it's never really humanity. And I could see that being an issue, but I don't care.
And again, that's like fair. This is the thing where I worry I'm giving the movie far, far, far too much credit. And I freely admit that. Feel free to dunk on me when I do. But one of the things that I found like actively interesting about Snyder's three Justice League movies is that there is a clear and linear progression. And I know I don't like Man of Steel, and I know lots of people don't like Man of Steel. But what you have is, with Man of Steel and with Batman v Superman, you have this weird thing where Snyder takes the trend of superheroes dropped into the war on terror in 9/11, which has been a fixture of the superhero genre going back to at least X2 by Bryan Singer, obviously brought to the fore by Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy, but even, say, the Marvel movies do it with, like, Civil War, Winter Soldier, and I mean even the Avengers movies kind of do it with the hole in the sky over New York City and madness pouring through and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's a staple of the genre, and what Snyder does with those movies is he says, okay, now I'm going to push that to breaking point. I think, like again, I know that we're in the midst of a Snyder reappraisal renaissance thing or whatever, and I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but there was a really great interview with him about Sucker Punch, and he's like, you know, when I made Sucker Punch, I wanted Sucker Punch to be a gigantic fuck you to the kind of people who want or thought they were going to get what they wanted from it. And there's a part of me that kind of admires, it's a very 12-year-old boy sentiment. But again, it's Snyder saying fuck you to the people who want a certain kind of product. And like, with Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, you have like this, again, the 80s deconstructionist, like, you know, Frank Miller stuff, where it's like, what if superheroes were real? What if they impacted American foreign policy? What if we were to treat them as metaphors for the American military industrial complex? And Snyder going, okay, fine, let's fucking do that. And doing it like to 11. And like, and again, this is where we get to what Lee said here. Like, Justice League is an incredibly, incredibly, like, dumb, basic superhero movie. There are no senators here. There are a couple of police officers and soldiers, but there's no military generals. There's never a moment where Superman goes into Congress. The President of the United States, voiced by Patrick Wilson, does not appear in this. This is not a world where ordinary people exist. And that is, I would argue, and again, being very generous, and feel free to call me out on being far, far, far too generous.
I'm ready.
Thanks, Jack. I'm just ready to pounce. I think that, you know, you can read that as Snyder saying, well, look, you saw in Man of Steel and Batman v Superman why treating these heroes as objects that exist in a real physical space, in a real world, in a recognizable political context is not a good idea, because eventually you get to like the climax of Man of Steel or the opening scene of Batman v Superman. So let's instead drop them into a world where, as Lee pointed out, they are literal new gods. And I actually, like, again, giving the movie probably a bit too much
You're
credit.
Giving this movie way too much credit.
I like to be generous. I'm like the critical Santa Claus. See, this is why me hating Joss Whedon's Justice League is such a big deal, because I'm like critical Santa Claus otherwise. Yeah. But what I will say, actually, like, the Batman arc in this, and like the arc of Bruce and Bruce Wayne, and Lee's right, he's not a real character. He doesn't really have anything to do as a human being. Mm-hmm. And that's in large part, I suspect, because Warner Brothers said, no, you're not doing the weird King Arthur and Lancelot thing with Superman and Batman and Lois Lane. And Zack Snyder's like, fine, fuck y'all, I'm out of here. But he does have this arc that I find strangely, strangely touching, where, like, and again, Lee pointed out, like, Bruce is traditionally the human guy in the Justice League. He's the mortal among gods. And the traditional arc with that has always been, well, Bruce is wary and suspicious and untrusting of them. And again, going back to Frank Miller, but things like, say, Mark Waid's Tower of Babel or whatever, that sort of stuff. I said Journey to Babel because it's like Star Trek. I don't know. This is how my brain works. But anyway, so the idea is that, like, you've had you'll get there in the end. You have this kind of like deconstruction of kind of Batman as this cynical, grizzled figure who's the real man in this world of gods. But in this movie, he embraces that idea of transcendence. He embraces the idea of superheroes as something that exists beyond the material and physical world, that are gods. And again, it's framed in that context. It's like, how do you know he's going to come? I have faith, Alfred. I have faith. And it's like, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm asking myself just once not to be a rational man. I need to believe in that. And this gets back to, and again, too much credit. We should have a little ping up here, a little sign that says Darren give him too much credit. But like, you look at what this movie means for Snyder personally, and he's talked about this in interviews. This isn't me supposing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's the loss of his daughter, the suicide of his daughter, which led to his departure from the project, and then kind of the product, I say, Freudian slip, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like led to his departure. The movie is dedicated to her. The inclusion of Alleluia, and again, this is the thing that Lee mentioned, the aching sincerity of this, the incredibly corny sincerity of this, mm-hmm. where there's no irony or there's no sense of detachment. His daughter's favorite song plays over the end credits in the version that played at her funeral that, like, Snyder fans and critics have been deriding and joking and mocking for years now. And it's just like, no, this meant a lot to her. There's a wonderful moment. And again, it's that moment of, like, the perfect synergy of, like, crass, vulgar blockbuster filmmaking and, like, weird doe-eyed innocence. The moment where, like, Bruce and Barry get into the product place Mercedes-Benz car with the loving close-up on the Mercedes-Benz logo, mm-hmm. and the kind of, like, steering wheel and stuff like that. But the camera then pans across as they drive onto the highway, and there's a giant billboard saying, "You are not alone," for the American Federation for Suicide Prevention, the charity for which Snyder raised so much money. And I look at that and I look at Bruce's arc and I think, this is a man who prides himself on being a rational, objectivist human being, mm-hmm. who is now saying, I want to believe in something more. Gods, I want to believe in something better. And I'm like, that's a weirdly personal thing to put in a 4-hour movie about Batman and Superman punching demons.
And then I have to be the dickhead. And I have to be the dickhead here because, I mean, and this is not casting any judgment on Snyder or his personal journey. But I feel like actually Batman's arc was handled better. This is one of the few things that was handled better in the theatrical cut. Because, and this is, you know, my DC experience is largely based around the cartoons. I watched a ton of, you know, Batman the Animated Series, The Adventures of Superman, the Justice League cartoon, what was that universe called?
The DCAU, the DC Animated Universe?
The DC Animated Universe, yeah. That kind of like 90s DC Animated Universe. That's where most of my Justice League DC knowledge comes from. And to me, the thing that the theatrical cut got so right was that Bruce isn't the human in a group full of gods. Clark is the most human out of them all because Bruce Wayne is a billionaire philanthropist playboy. Bruce Wayne has no connection to humanity anymore, and it's Clark that does. And that's the journey that he went on in the theatrical cut was, we need Clark back. Because Clark is the leader of this team. I'm not. And I dug that so much more.
Yeah. I don't know. It's
right?
Bruce. Yeah. I mean, it's, I'm not sure if that interpretation of Bruce would work in this universe, given they pulled from the Dark Knight Returns for BVS, mm-hmm. which is Batman already void of any humanity. And then at the end of the film, he hears Martha's name and he gets it back. I don't know. I don't know.
We won't go into that. We don't have time.
There's a separate I have an hour-long piece prepared on masculinity, toxic masculinity. I'm sorry.
But just some weird anecdote about giving this film too much credit. When I turned it on, the opening of it, and this is going to be really pretentious on my end. I am so sorry. But the opening, when Superman screams and it puts out this huge sound wave, it's like, I don't remember that happening in any of the comics. Is that a reference to Gravity's Rainbow? Where it's like a scream came across the sky, Thomas Pynchon's novel. And it's like, okay, that's a really, really weird thing to put in a superhero film, if that is what I think it is. But I don't know. It might have been me giving it to me. There were no more references, no more literary references that I noticed.
No, but that was, like, speaking to Snyder's strengths, that was a great visualization of Superman's power. And I actually really liked that in the movie.
And also, it's a very literal, you're on my turf now moment from Snyder, where, like, Whedon opens with this. And, like, this is one of the things that I do actually really dislike about the Whedon cut. The Whedon cut is very nostalgically pandering. It's like, you remember Superman, right? You remember John Williams' score, right? You remember the bright colors, the blues and the reds and stuff. Well, we're going to serve them up to you. Reheat it. Doesn't matter they're 40 years old. We're just going to put them up and plate them up and you're going to eat them. And I'm like, I don't really want to eat them. It's like, you're going to eat them. But But like the thing that I really like about that opening is that it is aggressively Snyder asserting himself. The opening shot of the movie is Doomsday's spike having pierced Superman's heart. And it's very much very aggressively like, no, this is my movie now. This is what you expected me. And what I find interesting about so much of the like Snyder cut is how conciliatory a lot of it is. It's outside of that, it's surprisingly gentle. It's surprisingly heartfelt. That's stuff that I mentioned with Bruce and things like that. It's very sincere. Now, you do get things like the blood splatter, for example, and like Wonder Woman killing a terrorist and all that sort of stuff. And there are little cues that they're kind of Snyder-esque. But like for most of the movie, it's relatively dignified and restrained. And then you hit the epilogue, the bit that Snyder reshot. And you end up with like Snyder's like, look, you thought I was conciliatory. You thought I was being generous. You thought I was meeting you guys halfway. And then you end up with Batman saying to the Joker, I will fucking kill you. And you're like, okay, you got to get it out of his system. Just, you know, that inner 12-year-old could only be restrained for so long.
That bothered me more than like, because I recently reviewed on Letterboxd the Mortal Kombat animated Scorpion film that came out. Mm-hmm. And that has the same issue where it's like, all right, on the level of storytelling and humor, this is clearly for children. Why is all of this violence here? Like, how do you justify that clash? Like, who is this for? Who is this language for? Who are these dick jokes for? And that's the same thing with this film. It's like the integrity of the narrative is about fifth grade level. Like you literally explain everything along the way. So if adults are supposed to be watching this, why are you explaining things to us? Why are you holding our hands at this level? At this point, it's insulting. So it's either insulting or in poor taste. With Snyder, it's probably in poor taste, but that just really bothered me. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Well, no, and like to me, Snyder's and you know, like I always have to put this caveat here, which is the role of a director is to make their vision of a movie. They are the captain, or they're the navigator of the ship. A director is the navigator. They point in a direction, and the best navigator can get you exactly to where they want you to get you. And so in that respect, Snyder is a great director. He gets the exact vision that he's going for. I also think he makes very dumb, bad movies. Those are two separate issues, and that's fine. But like Snyder's, and it's on point here in the Snyder cut, which is he has a dissonance problem where he tells the audience one thing about his superheroes and then shows another thing. Sometimes within the same sequence, I'm thinking of you know, like the big one is the Superman thing, right? Superman being kind of like the symbol of hope. Everybody's mourning Superman when, like we had already talked about in Batman versus Superman, everybody fucking hated Superman.
Well, like, they hated him because he was in the real world. He hadn't, you know, right. Like he hadn't left and like stopped.
But then like you can't
doing Congress hearings.
You can't have military marches mourning him if everybody fucking hates him. You have the cyborg who, after he discovers that he can hack into anything, there's a wonderful save the cat moment where he randomly finds a poor working mother, gives her a bunch of money. Hooray! Like he's a hero. He saved the cat. Then in the next scene, he talks to Wonder Woman and says, "Fuck this world." That doesn't compute. You have Barry Allen in his wonderful, by the way. I think overall, I really enjoyed his intro scene. My dog is very upset about something outside. I don't know if you can hear that.
Cookie's a big Ezra Miller fan.
Cookie really enjoyed the Snyder Cut, mostly because it made me sit down for 4 hours. Something's happening out there. I wonder.
Do you want to let Cookie in?
No. Someone else will take care of it, or they won't. It'll be fine. So The Flash, right? The Flash had a really wonderful intro scene where he saves what we can only assume is Iris from getting into a car crash. But in that scene, like he saves someone, he uses his power to save someone, but he's also kind of a creeper with her, like touching her face when she is not aware. Like these little moments where he's like, he's doing something great, but he's also a bit of a creeper. I don't necessarily like that. He has this problem where he tells you all of these people are good and heroic, but then he shows you that they're brooding and upset about the world, and it doesn't quite fit. This is my problem.
Yeah, Snyder, I mean, he's, like you said, he's been doing that since at least Watchmen. right? Mm-hmm. Where like every scene, everything that's important has some internal contradiction. The obvious example is Man of Steel, right? Mm-hmm. Where like thousands of people are dying everywhere, but murdering Zod is like super impactful. Like you let out this this guttural scream, savage scream, but it's like, what about the thousands of civilians who are dead everywhere? Like, did they not matter? Like, what's happening? And then carrying that hypocrisy over to Batman v Superman, where it's like, you better stop, Batman, because you're a murderer. It's like, you are too. Like,
yes.
You know what I mean? So Zack Snyder just can't help himself, honestly.
Well, and I'm seeing in the chat here, someone is saying, I'm not sure it's a bad thing to show that someone can be heroic, but also upset with the world. And make me mad, who made that comment? The point is balance. The point is like, what is the character? Why do they want to save the cat? I need to understand what's going on with a character in order to empathize with them. And when you have them bouncing back and forth, I can't land on anything.
Right.
Okay. I kind of quite like the archetypalness of all the characters, in particular the idea of like Superman. Because like one of the big things that you get when people complain about like Man of Steel and about Batman v Superman and stuff like that is the idea Superman wasn't inspiring enough. I quite like the way in which this is built. And again, it ties back into what Lee said, this obsession that Snyder has with superheroes as gods and myths and legends that you continually reinvent, which is, you know, not unfair because they actually like are fictional characters and they serve that purpose in our culture. Mm-hmm. But you have, you know, of course, mythology isn't corporate owned. That's the Big Mac. That's the Gillette razor close-up. Like, you know, Arthur, the story of King Arthur doesn't have a close-up of like Batman washing a Gillette razor that goes on for far too long. But like the idea of Superman as an idea that inspires us. Like, one of the things I really like about this is that Superman is, in the Whedon cut, Superman comes back from the dead and he solves all of the problems. Like, if you watch the final sequence of Whedon's Justice League, it's a gigantic, well, look, we all know Superman is the bestest man who ever superheroed, right? Just so we're all clear. So he like runs as fast as the Flash. He pulls apart the boxes when Cyborg can't, for example. And, you know, he does all this. He saves Bruce several times and they have that really awkward Whedon-esque interaction where he's like, I thought you didn't like me. I don't not like you. Anyway, but that sort of stuff. Whereas here you get to see all of the characters inherit something from Superman. Hmm. So Ezra Miller's Flash, he's a nice Jewish boy, like Superman is, metaphorically speaking. But he also, he's out of the world and then puts himself in at the end by getting a job. Aquaman has that thing like, you know, Kevin Costner's character where it's like, oh, you don't owe people anything. You don't have any investment in this world. Your job is to protect yourself, and then kind of comes around again. And then Cyborg, who gets like the big first flight moment, who gets like the moment at the end, which is the climax that happens at like most of the DCU movies. And I really like that it's thematically consistent. The moment where the villain turns to the hero. And again, a part of me is like, I choose to read this as a fuck you moment from Snyder, and I quite like that it's a fuck you moment from Snyder. There's a moment in most of the big like DCU movies where the villain arrives to the hero and says, hey, look, this world we're in kind of sucks. People are kind of awful, aren't they? How about we roll back the clock and we just reset everything back to the way that you remember it being, or the way that it used to be, or maybe even the way that you don't personally remember it being, but you have a vague cultural kind of like memory in the back of your reptile brain that it used to be like this. So in Man of Steel, Zod is like, hey, how about we just like genocide all the humans and make Krypton on Earth? Wouldn't you like that? Or in Wonder Woman, where Snyder has a story credit, it's Ares is like, hey, paradise on Earth, right? Before all these humans came along, we should probably kill them all. And even here you have the moment with like Cyborg and the mother boxes where it's like, look, you can get your old body back. You can have your old life back. Wouldn't you like that? And I quite like the idea that like as the three movies progress, you have Superman going from being the alien that can like either cause or prevent 9/11, this gigantic metaphor, through to Cyborg being the presence or like the god or the metaphysical representation of something that could cause or prevent the next financial crisis. There's a really great moment where in the dream world, like So, and again, problem with the movie, there's so much exposition. So much of this movie is characters talking to other characters. Yeah. Like, that's the big problem with this is like 2 hours of this is characters explaining things about themselves to other characters who probably should already know this. But the moment where they do the big, like, walkthrough of Cyborg's powers, and it's like, you could launch every nuclear weapon on Earth. And Cyborg's like, nah, I'm not really into that. And instead it's... and instead, like, he walks into a bank and he reallocates some money. Mm-hmm. And again, I think... this is something that, again, too much credit, a little too much credit alarm going up here. But I do think that, like, you could make an argument for Snyder's three DCU movies about moving the superhero genre from metaphors about dealing with the trauma of 9/11 and the war on terror towards dealing with the trauma and legacy of the financial crisis. Very telling. And again, too much credit alarm going off, like it's just blaring in the background now.
Yeah, that's, but that's reaching.
The moment where Martha Kent is introduced and her house, they foreclosed on the Kent farm.
Mm-hmm.
And the bank that is closed on the Kent farm is Comanche Bank. And I couldn't help but think of Hell or High Water, where they have this conversation where Hell or High Water is this metaphor for how the settlers came and took lands from the indigenous people, and then the banks came and took land from the settlers. And there's a moment in Hell or High Water where somebody goes, you know, Comanche, Lord of the Plains. And like an actual Native American turns around to him and says, Comanche, Lord of Nothing. You know, mm-hmm. And you have throughout, you have this idea of like the Flash, which I love, the Flash working in a gig economy. Like the Flash has three jobs, four jobs in order to pay for college, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. You have the moment about the reallocation of cash going on as well. Like, again, too much credit, but I like that kind of like mythic arc.
But this is classic Snyder, where he says all of these things and we are shown none of it. Like sure, Barry Allen has four jobs in a gig economy in order to pay for school, but do we see him struggle with that at any point? Do we see the ramifications of that?
So what you're saying is you want a 5-hour cut of this movie?
Fuck.
I'm kidding. No, it's a fair criticism. It is a fair. I know that like just put more in is a cheek answer. I'm sorry.
I think taking things out would help that,
yeah,
that as well. Like, because the Batman,
focus, yeah,
like, you know, if you're critiquing our financial structure, even like, I don't want to get into capitalism because I'll rant. But if that's what this is, right? If you're making that critique, then why is it a eye wink at the audience and you want us to clap and cheer when Bruce Wayne says my superpower is that I'm rich? Why are you doing gratuitous wealth? Why is Alfred drinking a $15,000 bottle of scotch if that is the critique?
Mm-hmm. You know?
Because
sorry,
Lee. Apologies. We can just like, can we just install the alarm permit and just have it ring? Because all of the other members of the Justice League are like metaphorical, abstract, fairy tale unicorn constructs. The idea of a good billionaire is a unicorn fairy tale construct. That's what Bruce Wayne is in the pantheon. Like, you have to invent a billionaire that nice. Yes, we met. Like, and again, you could probably, if you were being very generous, and let's just continue the trend, sure, why not? Like, one of the things that I actually like about, like, Batman v Superman is that it's, like, a billionaire who uses his money to beat up poor people in his spare time and has bad views about immigrants probably isn't going to be a nice person is like one of the things that I unequivocally love about like Batman v Superman. The revelation that like the rich dude who punches mentally ill people in the face because it makes him feel good about himself, probably not a nice guy. So that by the time you get to Justice League, it's like, oh yeah, but he's like a myth. He's a unicorn now. He's not a man. He's not a human being. He's not a real thing. You can just like, he's as imaginary as the dude who can like, you know, fire the world's nukes or whatever with a hand wave.
Can we just, by the way, also, because, you know, Snyder made a lot of changes from the theatrical cut to this cut, but decided to keep what is arguably the worst line Batman has ever uttered in any Batman property, which is, what's your superpower? I'm rich. That is the least Batman-y thing Batman has ever said. And this is including when George Clooney brought out the Bat credit card.
With an expiration date of forever.
Exactly. Like you had an opportunity here to fix a lot of things, and you kept the worst Batman line in.
Well, they did remove the faceplant in the boobs, which I quite admired. That was a good call. The Ezra Miller faceplant in Wonder Woman's boobs.
It was cartoony. Yeah. It was fine. Yeah, but, a little creepy, but you know, it was fine. He felt bad about it, I guess.
Like a cartoon wolf, they probably played a steam whistle in that close-up of his face as he looked around nervously. Sorry.
Ow!
Yeah.
I'd like to give the movie a little bit of credit because, you know, I specifically have been saying many bad things about it. I would like to give the Snyder Cut some credit, which is the rewrite of Steppenwolf. Steppenwolf as a bad guy is significantly more interesting in the Snyder Cut than he was in the theatrical cut. He's this middle management, boss character who is just trying to impress his boss. He and Darkseid have a history, and I love that. I love it when a movie starts like midway through a character's life. Like, he had some shit go wrong in the past, and now he's trying to make up for it by conquering Earth. That's really great and interesting. The bad part is he kind of looks like a thumb.
He looks like a pug. He's got these sweet little eyes. He's like a little pug. He just needs some love.
Yeah. He looks...
He fuses with the mother boxes and his eyes start glowing. He looks better. Right, like that.
Yeah, because they gave him like big human anime eyes with his like creepy frog face, and it looks awful.
It's so weird. And one of the things about Steppenwolf is when the main villain of any story is just a henchman, it's like obligatory. Like, oh my god, just get to the end. I'm not interested in him anymore.
Yeah,
but he was better this time, and he was like actually terrifying. It's like, oh yeah, they're not doing the no villain touch rule where if the villain is going to kill you, why is he touching the main characters in any moment and not killing them? That wasn't Steppenwolf. If he touched you, you were going to die or be hurt really, really badly. So he was at least intimidating and he had clear motivations, but he was still a henchman. And that's
right.
That's a big problem, actually, with it. And again, this is one of the things where Jack said something nice about the movie, so that means I can switch places and say something that's potentially critical of the movie. It's great. Like, what listeners don't realize about the podcast format is that you are largely defined in opposition to other people.
That's true.
So now Jack has said something nice, I can take the gloves off. One of my big, I'm not sure what to make of this aspects of the movie, is the weird contrast that exists between it being, because it's a four-hour movie, everything to everybody. So we're hailing this as a distinctively Snyder vision, which it absolutely is in terms of like shot construction, those kind of like 12-year-old one-liners, the interests and kind of the slow-mo and all the stuff that Snyder does when he makes a movie. It's also like very much a comic book movie. It's got all the MacGuffin stuff in there. It's got all the sequel hooks in there. It's got two post-credit scenes that go on for 23 minutes before the credits. It's that indulgent. It's got the same plot line as Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, and I know Snyder fans are gonna be like, yeah, but those came out years afterwards. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. That's not the point I'm making. It's very much breadcrumb type storytelling. It's incredibly conventional and straightforward. It is much less of a radical game-changing movie within the superhero genre than something like, say, Tim Burton's Batman from 1989, or like Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy from the 2008-ish, or Into the Spider-Verse, or any of those. This is like, for all that, like, I spent a large part of this going like, the reason why this is being so well received is because it stands in contrast to the Marvel movies. It's also quite like the Marvel movies in a lot of really frustrating ways. And again, that way that we talk about like how, you know, this is a victory for artisanal cinema and for like auteurism and for Snyder's vision, and it's not, it's art, it's not content, or whatever those pretentious labels mean. It also absolutely is content. It only exists because Warner Media, AT&T, decided that they needed something to put on their schedule between the release of Tom and Jerry and Godzilla vs. Kong. And that's the only reason that this thing exists. It is, like, as much as it is, like, art, as much as it isn't, you know, something exists in contrast to content, it is also exactly content.
Yes.
Like, that's the thing. And that's the weird, like, squaring the circle thing that I have in my head with it. This is where Darren ends up, like, for all the, you know, unnecessary and unjustified praise alarm that goes off over here, this is why I think it just averages out to fine. This is why I'm not like, this is a good movie. I'm like, no, this is just a mess conceptually. I don't know how to frame this. This is my fourth world. I'm like, I can't wrap my head around the anti-life equation that is this movie. What I will say actually on Steppenwolf also, which I really appreciated, Steppenwolf managed to capture that feeling of like being on a Zoom call with your boss in the pandemic who just doesn't want to be there. You're just checking in. You've done all your work. You put extra hours into the presentation and your boss is still like, I'm not really fucking interested, really.
I wish that this film had a more original approach, at least to the conclusions it comes to, because it really is just a let's get the thing, let's stop the thing, and let's stop the villain. If it was more interesting, and this doesn't have anything to do with this discussion, but I had the same issue with Black Panther. Like, the end of, they had such an opportunity. Like, imagine if Black Panther ended in just a long, like, Steve McQueen-esque conversation between the two, like the hero and the villain, like that would have been incredible because both of them had great points to make. And I think that would have been interesting. And that's the way you subvert the genre. And if you're Zack Snyder, you're in the driver's seat, you have all of this creative control. Go for it, man. Just make Superman the villain of the entire thing. And that would have been super interesting to me. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because like, not only does it follow the story of Infinity War and Endgame, it follows the story of the first Avengers movie where a henchman comes down with a big portal MacGuffin to have the real big bad guy come. Like, this is insultingly not treading new space.
Yeah.
It's just done so a little more violent. Like the people who say like this is, you know, Zack Snyder doing something different have just drank the Kool-Aid as far as I'm concerned. And yes, it is a very Snyder movie, but to me that just means that it's the same, only it has a few more cuss words and a significantly more slow motion.
Yeah, and it looks better, sort of.
Yeah,
I like
depending on the, you know.
And it has a distinct sensibility to it. Again, like that's the thing, is that like it's a cover version of a Bob Dylan song you've heard so many fucking times already. But at least it's a good, at least it's like a cover version that has its own character. That's like that's the weird situation where I find myself in, where it's like, no, this is not going to make my end of year top 40 or whatever, but I'm glad it exists. Thank you.
And just so I'm clear, because I know people who like follow me on Twitter are going to kill me about this. When I said it looks good, I'm talking about how distinct it is, guys. I'm not talking about like the quality of it, right? Because like I like the high contrast, desaturated look as opposed to the muddy, over digital look of Marvel.
Sure.
The gray, well corrected,
It's not Blade Runner 2049. It's not.
You're clean. No, you're clean. You wash your hands there. You're good.
Roger Deakins' Justice League. Now that's something I would like to see.
No, and I think like if we are going to like go on with a little bit more praise, I think, you know, Snyder is a great action director. I think a lot of the action sequences are incredibly well put together. The Flash saving Iris sequence is super wonderful. I love the way he does Flash's speed in general. I hate the way the Flash runs that thing.
Yeah. Well, that Ezra Miller run thing. Yeah.
Honestly, fucking hate that so much. It looks dumb. It looks so ridiculous.
Like a gazelle.
Like, I know he based that off of something very specifically, and as an actor, like, that's where he went with it, and Snyder said, yeah, go with it, and I just think it looks so silly every time he does it. Like, the fact that when Steppenwolf is on Themyscira and is fighting all the Amazon, he just picks up horses and throws them. I think that's so great, because he's a big, dumb guy. He just picks stuff up and throws it. Super badass.
Well, what I will say, actually, like, in terms of, and again, I think Sam Adams at IndieWire made this point, like, having watched the Whedon theatrical cut and this version back to back, it is, you get a sense of, like, and again, this is one of those things where, again, too much credit alarm, but the...
next time, warn me, I'll make a graphic.
You just keep flailing it.
I'll just keep, but like, a graphic or something,
one of my big pet problems with modern internet film discourse is the idea that like plot is the most important thing in a movie. That like, and again, it's something you see with spoiler culture and stuff like that. It's the idea that if you know how a movie's going to unfold, it's spoiled for you because like actually seeing it happen or witness it happen or how it happens is less important than the fact that this particular box was checked. And I think the Snyder Cut is a great demonstration of how pointless all of that is because, and again, obviously it is a completely different movie because so much of it exists inside a computer. So it is actually a completely different movie than the theatrical cut. But where you see overlap in things like the action scene, so things like Steppenwolf at Themyscira, things like the confrontation at Stryker's Island, you see the difference in how Whedon cuts together action as compared to Snyder cutting together the same action from the same stock elements with the same characters, with the same script and the same story objectives to accomplish. And it demonstrates again as... And again, you know, Lee is like talking to people like they're 4-year-olds, and that's probably fair and condescending, and I apologize for that. But it illustrates the extent to which all of this stuff is filmmaking as much as storytelling, as much as kind of like Wikipedia summarizing. And I think that there's something to be said for that, for its existence as that, as like, this is the same movie in terms of plot, in terms of like characters, in terms of start points, in terms of key plot elements, in terms of where the characters end up and what the function of this is. But it's a completely different movie because the way in which it's made is different. And you can see that even in the way in which Snyder holds shots for longer, the way in which he cuts around action sequences in order to situate the audience, the way in which Whedon's primary objective in cutting together the movie is to get something that lasts 118 minutes. So everything is just chopped down to the bone and there's no rhythm, there's no heartbeat to it. And I think that's something that's very interesting in a weird film school-y sort of way about the two films, perhaps.
It is really interesting. It's like the Raid thing, because if you were to explain to people what the Raid film was, like, okay, 14 people go into a building, 2 make it out. That's not very
right? What a compelling story.
Like, you're sweating by the end of it, right? Or like Mad Max Fury Road. They go a place and they come back, right? It's really, and that's what internet film discourse sort of misses. Zack Snyder, that's a really good point. Zack Snyder is a really good example of how it doesn't really matter what the plot is. It's about the execution and the way you handle it.
I think yes and no. Like that is a really fantastic point. And like, by the way, from a film studies standpoint, like I'm so happy that we have, you know, the theatrical cut and the Snyder cut because it like, teach this in a class. Look at what two people can make from essentially the same stuff. It's amazing.
The same raw material, like the same footage, even like not even the same script, the same footage.
Exactly. And like, to me, that is really fascinating. And that's why I'm really happy that we have the Snyder cut. But okay, so I agree that plot isn't what's important, and this is something I touched on earlier, which is plot is not what's important in these kinds of movies, because guess what? The hero is going to win. We know that. We know that in every single superhero movie ever that has ever existed. The hero is going to win. There might be some losses, but the hero is going to win at the end. That's how it works. And so the only thing that matters is the characters. I'm going to bring up something that might be controversial, which is I really enjoyed the ending of Lost, the television show Lost. I really enjoyed it, even though it didn't sew up all of the loose ends that it had put out there, because at the end of the day, I really enjoyed the characters, and the characters came to a satisfactory end. And so my big problem with the Snyder Cut is I don't care about any of these characters. He hasn't given, and you know, this might just be a personality conflict between me and Zack Snyder, but he hasn't given me any reason to care whether or not they win or lose. I know they're going to win. It's a superhero movie. They always win. I want to care about them. I keep going like this, and I don't know why.
I think that's a good point as well taken. Again, with my weird position on the film, even though I enjoyed it, by the end of it, I'm like, all right, that's enough of that. I'm good if I never see any of the characters again. Like, I don't need the rest of it. I'm good. Yeah. You know, it would be nice, I guess, to see like Darkseid and all of that stuff. But I'm fine without it. I wasn't invested in these characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, like, I'm kind of curious about the sequel to this, and not because I'm invested in the characters. I'm kind of curious about the sequel to this because I've read the summary, and it looks like Snyder is doing 6 solo superhero movies in a single blockbuster. And I'm like, how the fuck will that work? Like, that's what I'm interested in terms of, like, seeing the sequel.
Yeah. But I don't really want to watch, like, Wonder Woman die. I don't want to watch Lois Lane get burned to a crisp and all.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and I believe, like, the official word is that there is no sequel. This wraps up the trilogy, Snyder's trilogy, even though this performed incredibly well, which is, I guess, the other point of this is the Snyder Cut literally broke HBO Max's servers the day it came out. Everybody wanted to watch this. Everyone was so hungry for a communal experience again that we all watched it day of. But I believe official word came down, maybe even today, is just like, this concludes the Snyder trilogy, which I mean,
they also said that, like, Joss Whedon's Justice League concluded the Snyder trilogy 4 years ago. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but I don't want there to be footage of me on a show going, it'll never happen. That will haunt me for like 40 years after it does.
I think Nick's over in the chat, our editor in chief. Nick is in the chat saying, is the upcoming Batman resetting the DCU again? I believe that Robert Pattinson's The Batman takes place in an alternate universe.
Yes, like Joker, it's a pocket continuity, and it will apparently have its own spin-offs, because everything has spin-offs. It will now have a HBO show that was supposed to be overseen by, is it Trevor Winters, the guy who wrote Boardwalk Empire, who wrote The Wolf of Wall Street as well for Scorsese, but he dropped out. Terrence Winters, that's who it is, Terrence Winters, apologies. But yeah, the plan is that it will launch its own separate pocket universe, in the same way that presumably, like, Birds of Prey is in its own weird pocket universe, because it coexists in a world with Jared Leto. Joker and his damagedness.
Wait, but now isn't that officially the Snyderverse?
Yeah, and also then the Suicide Squad, then presumably also, because it also features Harley Quinn. So it's very messy, the continuity. I like this. As someone, like, when the MCU showed up, I was like really excited about shared continuity, because I literally live in a house made of comic books, as listeners can see.
I see all of your comic books.
Yes. But I was like, yeah, this is fun. This'll be a fun experience in terms of media, because it'll mean that you can do things like comic books do, where you can have like the weird indie solo title that's very quirky and very odd and very out there. You could have like the satirical superhero team, like the Next Wave or like the Ecstatic or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you can have the big Avengers blockbuster. And I was like, this is great. This is what I really want in mass media. And it turns out, no, that's not what a shared universe is, apparently, in cinema. A shared universe is everything is the main Avengers book constantly, all the time and nonstop. So I've kind of learned to be like, you know, I'm okay with continuity not being a thing. I'm okay with like getting something like, you know, Joker that's weird and out there, something like Aquaman that's weird and out there, doesn't make any sense. Things like Teen Titans Go that is fantastic and massively underrated, and possibly the best DC movie for the past, 5 years, 10 years maybe? But there's a separate debate that we won't open right now.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, actually. I actually prefer it that way, because while Joker didn't work for me personally, I love the fact that it exists. Yeah. The Batman looks to be like the next one in that line, where it's its own thing entirely. I trust Matt Reeves, given his trilogy, the Apes trilogy. I didn't love his remake of Let the Right One In, but whatever, that's another thing. So I love this lack of continuity, because the Marvel issue is like, I love Blade, and I don't know how Blade is going to work in that universe. Yeah. PG-13, it's gonna be a mess, and I'm not gonna watch it because it's gonna upset.
Oh, you're gonna watch it? Come on, don't lie. We're all.
Two-time Oscar winner, Marshall Ali.
Yeah, I love him, but I didn't watch the last Spider-Man film. I haven't watched a Marvel film since Endgame, actually, just because they don't look interesting.
That is interesting. I don't like. To me, I'm just like. I was there day one for Wesley Snipes' Blade. I made it all the way through those Blades. I'm so excited for more Blade. I agree. It's not going to be the same. Like, no motherfuckers will be ice skating uphill in the Marvel version of Blade. But
My favorite detail about it is apparently David S. Goyer was just talking to Wesley Snipes one day, and Wesley Snipes just remarked casually, "Some motherfucker's always trying to ice skate uphill." And Goyer's like, "Can I use that in the script?" And apparently, yeah and, that's how that.
Oh no, and Wesley Snipes didn't want it in that sequence. He's like, "No, just do a take for me." Yeah.
Weird anecdote with me and Blade. First of all, it's the first film I ever saw in theaters. I was like 6 years old. I was six when it came out. Mm-hmm. That was the first film. Also, I was so obsessed with it that I wrote down every line of dialogue on just like loose leaf paper and just memorized the script in my head. Mm-hmm. Blade is also the first screenplay that I ever wrote. It's a dog shit screenplay. But I wrote my own Blade story. It's about 250 pages long.
Nice.
It's a nightmare. It's bad. But
Your Snyder cut. This is like 10 years down the line, you'll make your 4-hour Blade epic.
Oh my God. Yeah. It would be long as hell. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't make that script because, it is dog shit. But I love Blade as a character. Mm-hmm. I love the anti-hero stuff.
Blade is one of these weird movies where like Blade helped, like Blade not helped. Blade literally set the tone for the early, middle years of comic book movies. The reason that the X-Men wore black leather is because Blade did so well. Yeah. Like it literally like kicked down the door for what was the modern era of comic book movies. And so coming back to it now that comic book movies have basically been the dominant form of popular culture, I'm very excited to see how they walk that line. And I guess like to bring it full circle into like the talk about the Snyder Cut, which is like the Snyder Cut has murder and killing and all of this stuff, and it all doesn't feel right. Whereas I know Darren and I over on our other show, A Marvelous Escape, we just talked a little product placement there that you can catch every Saturday right here on the Escapist Movie Channel.
That's my self-promotional alarm going off. Apologies.
self-promotion. That's great. We just got done talking about Falcon and Winter Soldier, who is also, murdering. Both of them are murdering people in fun action sequences. Captain America murders Nazis. It's great.
Not Nazis, Hydra. They're a very different thing, Jack.
Oh, no, very sorry.
We fixed that in the comics because apparently we don't want to offend Nazis. I don't understand what's happening at Disney, but anyway, sorry.
No. Well, the Falcon murdering people in episode one of Falcon and Winter Soldier seems appropriate. It seems to make sense within that world that they've created. In the Snyder Cut, Superman using his laser vision to mutilate his enemy while Aquaman stabs him through the chest, while Wonder Woman decapitates him to mail him back to his boss, this is all stuff that really happens, feels wrong and out of place. It feels like I get to make whatever I want. We're doing blood splatter now. And so I feel like that's the benefit of the cohesive nature of the Marvel movies, if that can make sense, if I can tie it back around like that.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I mean, this is one of the things where I am kind of like, Shazam is a very much a PG-13 superhero movie. It exists in the DCU. Mm-hmm. Birds of Prey is an R-rated superhero movie, and it exists in the DCU, and I'm glad that it does, because a large part of what makes Bird of Prey work is that it is R-rated, and it can do things like show you Ewan McGregor forcing a woman to strip off and dance and be humiliated because his pride's hurt, mm-hmm. which is not something you can put in a PG-13 movie. So I'm kind of okay with that like level of freedom existing. I would, if you were implying, like putting consistency in, I imagine it would be a low ceiling, a low floor, and basically nothing would get over PG-13. So I'm quite happy with that freedom existing. I see Lee's point entirely, that these are movies for children, and they're very much movies for children. And so having Batman say, "I will fucking kill you," is like a bit, like even for me, who's like inner 12-year-old is like, this is like a metal album cover, it's totally rad. Was like, this is a bit too far. This is a bit much. And then we're going to have Jared Leto exposit the entire plot of A Death in the Family, because we are still apparently not over that, what, 40 years after that happened?
But
30 odd years?
The thing for me is context. Does it make sense in context? And Birds of Prey is a movie that, while I thought had a few problems, I overall really enjoyed, because all of the violence, all of the gratuity made sense in context of the movie, whereas in the Snyder Cut, all of the excessive violence and all of the gratuity felt like an afterthought. It didn't make sense in context.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there are ways to explore some of the more mature themes, like just to remake that point with the, I will fucking kill you. That would work if the storytelling didn't have so much expository dialogue. Like, don't hold my hand throughout it and then try to make me an adult all of a sudden. Like, just,
yeah,
I need consistency. That's about it, though.
Yeah. I will speak up for, I actually do quite like the like weirdly gratuitous blood splatter in the movie, when like human beings are thrown against walls, like even when the Atlanteans are thrown against rocks, when Wonder Woman is like dispatching the reactionary terrorists, because of course it's a Superman 2 homage, because we're reconstructing superheroes, that when they bang off the walls, their heads just kind of like explode like eggs. I kind of like that stuff, if only because it reinforces the idea. And again, I know that Jack doesn't like this, so I'm like, yep, Darren in opposition again.
Perfect.
But because it reinforces the idea that, like, these superheroes are primal elemental forces, and the world around them is, to quote a Superman cartoon, a world of cardboard, but we are literally just bags of meat juice by comparison. And That should unsettle you. There should be something slightly uncanny about that. And again, this is something that, I quite like, Batman v Superman, in large part because it feels very much like a fuck you to a certain segment of like power fantasy driven fans, because it's like, yeah, the power fantasy is fucking toxic. So I don't mind occasionally getting a reminder that in this world of elemental forces, people like, being thrown across the room has consequences. Having your head cracked against a wall has consequences. I don't mind that too much.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know.
No, and I think making sure we all remember that we are bags of meat juices is a perfect place to end this discussion. Mostly just because I love that sentiment. That's true. We are nothing but bags of meat. I think it's good that even though the three of us have, wildly different opinions about the movie, we can all have a very lovely conversation about the different aspects of it. Isn't that pleasant and nice?
Oh, yeah. No, I am fairly sure that even though I've been the most positive, you two are right. That's...
This was great. I mean, if this were a Twitter exchange, I doubt it would have been this positive.
Text
lost in just typing, mm-hmm. and that there's character limits. So this was great.
Absolutely.
No, our pleasure.
Lee, thank you so much for joining us. I know, for a lot of people, investing the time to watch the movie was too much to begin with, but we appreciate you taking the time to chat with us about it. Once again, Lee, where can people find you if they want to?
You can find me at cleverly_dope on Twitter, and you can find my YouTube at The Fake Critic.
Absolutely. Thank you all for watching this and or listening to it later. We really appreciate you. Hopefully you enjoyed this somewhat sane conversation on a somewhat insane property. Once again, I've been Jack Packard.
I've been Darren Mooney.
And we'll see you next time.
Well,